We've talked through these different reflections about certain meetings with God in Jesus and different characters or powers who have done so. We started off with an angel meeting Mary. We looked at a number of people who then met Jesus. And as we started with an angel, we now meet another such power, death. Luke chapter 23 and verse 44. By now it was about midday, and a darkness fell over the whole land, which lasted until 3 in the afternoon. The sun's light failed, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus gave a loud cry and said, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. And with these words, he died. I was very young, perhaps 5 years old. I stood beside the grave. My right hand was being held by that of my aunt. All my known family was standing around this final resting place. The one who had died was my great uncle, Chris. He used to take me to watch the steam engines thunder past his house. He had a true marble ball made of marble, and he kept it at the foot of a plant in a plant pot in his windowsill. I could roll it to him and he'd whack it back to me with his walking stick. Now he was in a box at the bottom of a large hole that we were standing next to. Around the grave was a wooden frame that the gravedigger had used. When we got back home for the wake, I remember pointing out to my grandmother that the wooden frame round her mirror in the kitchen was an exact replica of the frame round great Uncle Chris's grave. Feelings? The only two I can remember which registered were that death must be met by the whole community being together, and an intellectual curiosity at the mechanics of it all. Other deaths occurred. They left me with feelings that if I closed my eyes, I might die in the night. But my first sight and touching of one who was dead was my grandmother. I was 16. I loved her to bits. She'd been an avid reader, and my love of books had come directly from her influence. Christmas Carol filled me with tears. She inspired me to read it. My love of history comes from the books she encouraged me to read. And now I was sitting by her coffin with the lid open. We were in the front room of her home, the room in which the conviviality of Christmas had been imbibed within the crucible of kinship. Grandad playing the accordion, uncle playing the piano, dancing, singing, laughter, drinking, games, riddles, hubbub. Now, silence. The silence of death. Feeling? Ah, now these were deepening. Grief, mingled with thankfulness and gratitude for the love that she shown me. I felt I wanted to sit with her forever, and the crystallization drawn from all the experience of previous deaths that this was all part of life. Pain, disappointments, death. These afflict us as a people, as a community. Tales of 30 men being killed in my granddad's pit in one day echoed in my mind. But we gird our loins and together as a community we go on. But for the first time, curiosity, fear lest I die if I close my eyes in sleep, had been joined with another strain. melancholy. He moves on. I'm now 24. I'm helping old Percy Thorne, a fantastic character. He's manager of the front office at Raymond Dobson's solicitors, where I'm now working in Northgate, Chichester. I agree to help him, and he's in his 60s, to help an elderly lady in her 80s by cutting down her trees for her. This bloke's a complete joker, but he's a lovely fella. He sends me up the tree, put a rope round it, start cutting away with the saw. Then I hear him laughing and joking. Then I look down. What the heck's that? And he's wearing a woman's wig. He's in his boiler suit, skipping around at the bottom. Bang, he falls over on the floor. He's joking, isn't he? No, he's not joking. It wasn't a joke. He was dying. It was a massive heart attack. I shinned down the ladder, took out his false teeth, gave him the kiss of life, held him in my arms. But I could see in his eyes, he died. I just held him there. I went to break the news to his wife. But death won't touch me. I'm 24. Yes, one day I'll meet him personally, but not for ages. Death is on a far horizon. Now I'm 62. Still active, but now and again when the east wind blows and my bones and joints feel chilled for the first time in my life, he's getting closer. Great Uncle Chris, several others, my grandmother, the handling of many dead people in the hospital mortuary in school days, Percy Thorne. I've seen consequences of those whose own path has crossed the path of death. But my own personal path is miles from his, as all young people think. But now I feel my path and his converging. They're nearer the crossing point than when I held my auntie's hand in that blustery cemetery. In the time of quiet we might have later in the service, think, if you will, of your own experiences, your brush with the casualties of death, and the feelings you had at each juncture, and how they've subtly changed. We try to evade death, to close our mind to him, but he won't be ignored. In every news flash, in personal experiences, workmates, friends, and loved ones, he skirts about us and ekes into our lives. Jesus knows him and has seen him, just as you have, in the casualties of his presence. Jesus's father, Joseph, Anna, his grandmother, Lazarus, his friend, the Galileans whom Pilate assassinated, the citizens of Jerusalem on whom the Tower of Siloam fell, in the very breath and whisper of Satan's voice in temptation. But this is different now. Jesus is not witnessing the casualties of death, but death himself. This avenger of sin now walks towards Jesus through the crowd. Jesus is impaled on the cross. He feels his life ebbing away. Exhaustion, blood loss, racking pain, more frequent moments of near asphyxiation. If others are not aware that death draws near, if humans are unable to see this dark spectre approach, the planets seem to know as the sky now darkens, as the veil of the temple is torn, as the flies begin to settle on his flesh, anticipating the relish that soon will be theirs. They know. They seem to sense his last few steps. Soon the eyes of Jesus grow dim. the Christ can almost feel death's hand touch his failing flesh. Not the others now, not the casualties of death, but death himself is here. The paths that gradually, knowingly have converged now approach the point of meeting. There is a Jewish prayer of the dead that Jesus will have heard at his father's demise and that of all those whose deaths he had witnessed. This now surely runs through his mind. It is this: I went down into the depths of the earth, to the land of the peoples of the past, to those whose hope is gone, who are but shadows of those that once they were, to the darkness of Sheol, to the depths of Hades. I rest with my fathers in a land of darkness. Death claims the soul of Jesus, and consciousness becomes oblivion. The heart ceases to beat, the impulses of the nerves are no more. Into your hands, O Lord, I commit my spirit. One day, this will be your direct experience and mine. Our paths will have met with the path of death. The body of Jesus hangs lifeless on the cross. Soon it will be taken and laid in the cave which was to have served as the last resting place of a leading Pharisee and friend of Jesus, Joseph of Arimathea. But wait. This is no ordinary death. The Logos, which is permanently annealed now to the soul of Jesus, the carpenter of Nazareth, will descend into the depths of the earth and to the people of the past. Picture Sheol and Hades and all who have lived before the birth of Christ and all whom you love and know, divested of the animation that their bodies would give. In the next days, before Easter, between now and then, the Logos, with Jesus, descends into this darkened world. The Logos, which is the light which the darkness has never overcome, because the Logos created death, darkness, and all things. Jesus moves through and touches all those whose paths before and after his birth have met his path, and by their response coincided with his. The Logos touches, and the Logos is life. I went down into the depths of the earth, to the land of the peoples of the past, to the darkness of Sheol, to the depths of Hades, to the land of darkness.